SMQB's episode 158. We're recording this on April Fool's Day, April 1st. And you can hear us on Spotify, Apple Pod, or wherever you get your podcasts, and see us on YouTube at SMQB's. Hey guys, how are you? I've got with me House and Milk. We're down to SMQB's tonight.
Yeah, we got one at the opening day.
One at opening day for the Nats, and one took a verdict in a trial in Houston and is on his way back to Dallas.
Winner chicken dinner.
Yeah,
baby. Are the Nats already losing?
Oh, yeah. Yep. To the undefeated Pirates.
That's right. They are 4-0.
Pirates always start out strong.
Not an April Fool.
Yeah, yeah. So let's start out with the who are you going to take to the bar and have a drink with segment of the show, Milk.
I'm taking the guy right behind me because we got a big decision to make today, fellas. Kevin
that
Costner.
Behind you. Oh.
Kevin Costner is up for both movies, Bull Durham and Field of Dreams, in our final pick'em. This is going to be a battle, and I'm looking forward to it. To be clear, I still have not made up my mind on where
I neither.
Yeah, I made up my mind, and my pick isn't even up there. It should be Redford behind you with the
get
the
over it.
But anyway,
we could have a coup. We could have a coup today.
Yeah, we could change the vote right now.
A Price Waterhouse Cooper has given me the sealed envelope with the selections when we get to it of Bison and Pope. So I have their selections.
Oh.
All right. House, who are you taking to the bar?
Well, one last drink before Joel Embiid returns to the court tomorrow.
Yeah, baby.
Against Oklahoma City. And I think we're in eighth right now. I think there's 10 or 11 games. I'd like to get out of the play-in. It will be interesting to see what kind of MVP this guy is. Does he make that much of a difference that he can take them through a round or two in the playoffs? He looks fully healthy in the in the shoot around. So we'll see.
Doesn't it just show you that you went to eighth? Weren't you way high? I mean, what were you when he went out?
Third or fourth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeez.
All right. Well, I'm going to take my man, the Honey Badger, Danny Hurley. Hurley is the psycho, intense gym rat that all you haters love to hate. But he doesn't care. He's the Honey Badger. The Honey Badger don't give a shit. He is who he is. He's very self-aware of what a psycho he is. He doesn't care. He loves the criticism. And he's getting every ounce out of these players on his way to a repeat championship. So I'm going to take him to the bar, have a drink, and thank him on behalf of all UConn fans for being so awesome.
Would you hate him if he were on another team?
Nope.
You like his antics.
I like his style.
He's okay. Intense.
He's all intense. Right.
Let's move on to what Milk foreshadowed. We are down to the final two all-time greatest baseball movies, and in the finals are two Kevin Costner movies, Bull Durham and Field of Dreams. I don't know how the hell the natural's not there, but it's not.
So bizarre.
We'll stick with the poor seating results here. Who do you got, Milk? Have you figured it out in the last 2 minutes?
Look, going back and forth on this, they are two spectacular baseball movies. They each have a little bit of everything, comedy, drama, but there is just something about Field of Dreams that just strings at your heart. The end, when he asks his dad to play catch, you just can't get past that. I love that moment. That's a great movie. I'm going Field of Dreams. Bull Durham is number two, but I can't say no to Field of Dreams. It's always been there. That's my vote. Field of Dreams.
House, what does Pope say?
Well, Pope and Bison, if you listen to this podcast, for our longtime listeners, you probably know that those guys list Bull Durham not just as their favorite baseball movie of all time, but certainly in the very top, if not the top movies of all time. So those guys ramrodded that movie to the very top, pushing out Roy Hobbs and The Natural. But we have two votes now in for our absentees. They got in their proxies, and Bull Durham has one vote from Bison and one vote from Pope, which puts up Bull Durham 2-1. Oh. I should note that for me,
oh boy,
I think, you know, for whatever you count, the AFI, American Film Institute, they've got like Bull Durham as like the number 97 comedy. Bull Durham is a very, very funny movie. It is a great baseball movie. But for God's sake, Major League Baseball is now in year 3 or 4 of having a whole game played in a cornfield in Iowa dedicated to this movie, Field of Dreams. If that doesn't tell you that it's the greatest baseball movie of all time, Major League Baseball has built a complete game around this movie. I think baseball is about, it's about apple pie, it's about hot dogs, it's about father sons, it's about tradition. That's what Field of Dreams captures like none other. I put Field of Dreams as a top 20 movie of all time, maybe even top 10. And it's definitely my vote. With The Natural out, it is my vote for the best baseball movie of all time goes to Field of Dreams, leaving the count at 2-2 and all of the pressure, all of it on Rooster. The guy who loves the ball being hit to him, bases loaded, bottom ninth. He loves the ball being hit to him.
Crushing pressure.
If you,
I will tell you that I really believe The Natural is the number one all time baseball movie, hands down. Much better than these two movies, in my opinion. If I have to pick between these two movies, I'm so sorry to two of you, but I think Field of Dreams is just a little too sappy and too Hollywood, too Hollywood for me. It's just. I don't know. It's a little bit incredible and sappy.
I was afraid of this.
I'm going Bull Durham over Field of Dreams. Very reluctantly, because I don't think Bull Durham even belongs in the number one conversation with The Natural.
I will agree
with you that probably Major League is funnier than Bull Durham.
About the distance.
I'm sorry, guys.
It really would have been fun to screw the other two guys, but I just don't really like
Field of Dreams.
Well,
all right, I'm going to get all kinds of hate mail, I know, after this.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Jeremy Quaid. I'm sorry.
No, people aren't going to be shocked by this. Bull Durham is a great baseball movie, and it's not inconceivable it could win this whole thing, but I think we got it wrong.
So
we'll see what the fans say.
Hey guys, real quick before we move on to the other stuff, is there anything, let's not talk about the Yankees, but is there anything in week one of Major League Baseball that's just like really grabs at you to say, holy crap, look at that in the first week of baseball? Not really, right? I mean, the Ohtani thing is already like brushed under for a little while this investigation is going on. But what else has happened? Nothing. There's no big injury.
No, I mean, I guess nothing massive. Houston is not the powerhouse I thought they were, but only that's based on a 4-game sample.
Hey, are the Pirates 4-0? Yes,
they are.
Okay. Will they end up 500? Yes.
No.
Maybe, probably less. It's too early to tell.
I mean, I do think your Rays actually may be in trouble.
We are in trouble until
White Sox are in trouble.
Well, White Sox might not win more than like 30, 40 games. They are terrible.
They're going to be down in Oakland A's territory.
Yes.
The Red Sox are going to have one of their worst years in many
years. You think so?
Oh,
you
think so? Yeah.
I don't, I mean, okay. Look, the Mariners are a good team. They, I know they split with them, but that was in Seattle, right?
Yeah.
I think it's impressive to see
three games.
It's impressive to see that the teams like the Orioles and the Rangers and the Braves and the Diamondbacks, they are still carrying some of their postseason mojo.
Yep. Yep.
If there was one thing I would talk about from a three game or whatever it was, pool of evidence, the
four game sweep. Did you mean to say four game sweep?
Yeah. I'm not talking about the Yankees. The Orioles.
Haters. Look haters.
Really, really good.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I kept looking at the score and I'm like, oh, they've scored 12 runs already. Like, what? I mean, they're, yeah.
They've got some call-ups coming up later and it'll be better.
Hey, and just so our listeners know, because I'll probably do this for the next 35, 37 weeks of the season, the Mets suck. Each week, I'll remind you.
It's really
amazing. Listen, we say it every year. The Mets and the Jets suck. No matter who they sign, no matter what they do, those people will get hurt and they will suck. Just count on it, Mets and Jets fans.
It's already over.
Their season is over.
It's over. And the season's over.
Let's move on to the Final Four, men's Final Four, Milk. How do you see this shaking out with UConn, Alabama, Purdue, and NC State?
Well, first of all, I think last week, Chris Nace was getting all over these conferences, who's representing whatever. Can we all, you know, enjoy that there's four teams from four different conferences in the Final Four? ACC, SEC.
To Bison's credit, two of them are from the two legit basketball conferences, in his opinion. The Big East and the ACC.
The ACC representative is the 11th seed. But look, I obviously we have to talk a little bit about NC State. It is incredible what they've done. No one saw this coming. They have now won. Last time I said it, last week it was seven games they'd won in 14 days or 15 days. It's now nine games that they've won in a row in 22 days. And who they beat and how they're doing it is really incredible. They take out Marquette on Thursday or Friday. Then I bet on Duke. Surprisingly, I lost that bet. I thought for sure that they were going to lose that game. They're going to freak out. It was Duke. They couldn't get past the fact that they were playing Duke. And they did what they've done this entire tournament and played impeccable defense. And I think they're averaging, I looked it up today, 35% shooting for the opposing team and 24% from three-point land. So they've been unbelievable on the perimeter. They held Duke to right on that 32% field goal percentage and 25% from three-point land. DJ Burns is now becoming a household name. You know, everyone outside the ACC really didn't really know him until this tournament started. They look for real. I'm very impressed, but I will say this. Purdue and UConn are on a collision course. I don't think Alabama has a chance against UConn. I don't.
Oh, Cricket. Cricket Wireless has.
There you go. He's back.
There he comes. Hey, buddy. You paid your bill.
Oh, I went out?
Yeah.
When did I go out?
You don't think you Alabama? Said,
yeah, yeah, I don't think Alabama. So. I think this is a Purdue-UConn collision course. And it's mainly because of their inside men. Edie and Klingon are NBA draft pick, you know, lottery picks, whatever you want to call them. I think that showed this weekend. How many points did Edie have? 40 yesterday or when they played? Illinois couldn't stop. I mean, they looked okay in the first half, but what a ridiculous 30-0 run. I mean, that's just sickening. You know, I don't think that's ever happened before. To get UConn to get back in the game. So I look, guys, I see Purdue, UConn. I don't see Bama winning. I don't see NC State winning. They could both be blown out. I'm betting on Purdue. I'm betting on UConn with the line. So I think it's going to be, those games aren't even going to be that close. And it's going to set up for an unbelievable final against really the two, arguably maybe throw Houston in there, two of the best teams that went into this tournament. So
yeah, all year long, they were one, two, or three. Those two teams.
I love the tournament. It's great. There's upsets. There's these one-off wins, but it really always kind of has a way of sorting itself out. And I think we're going to probably see the top two teams play each other. You could throw Houston in there, I guess, for the national championship next Monday night. And maybe we'll have a pod before that to talk about our winners, but it's been great. And props to Bama and NC State. No one really had them there, but I think this is Purdue and UConn's tournament from here on out.
You know, I wouldn't dismiss Alabama quite so quickly. I know UConn is just behemoth right now, but there are only two teams left in this tournament who have balanced scoring, and that's UConn and Alabama. UConn last game had five guys in double-digit scoring, and so did Alabama. Purdue had two guys. Purdue had Edie at 40 points and Lawyer at 14 points. That's it. NC State had two guys, the two DJs, 29 points and 20 points. That's it. They don't have balanced scoring, those two teams, but Alabama does. And if they're hitting threes at the rate that they were hitting against Clemson, I think they could beat anyone. Now, I do think UConn's going to wipe them out. And I do believe Purdue will beat NC State. And then because Edie doesn't get the kind of scoring support that Klingon gets, I mean, UConn had five guys in double digits, and one of them was not Tristan Newton in the Illinois game. He was just playing distributor, getting assists and getting the ball moved around. He can score big time. He could be their leading scorer any given night. So if Klingon, who Danny Hurley calls Kling Kong, if he just neutralizes Edie, meaning they score about the same each, and Klingon has a pretty good backup too. So if between Klingon and his backup, they neutralize Edie, there's not a lot of scoring behind Edie, and whereas UConn has scoring every which way they need it, and that's why I think they're the favorite.
So there's a lot to be said about these Final Four teams. Let me start with NC State. NC State has a chance to do what has never happened in the tournament before, which is the lowest seed ever to win at the Final Four. There have been 6-11 seeds who have made it. LSU in 86, George Mason 06, VCU in 2011, Loyola Chicago 2018, UCLA in 21, and now NC State. But they all get knocked out. I think the same will happen to this team, but no matter what happens to NC State, let's not forget that they entered the ACC tournament at 17-14. Kevin Keats will lose his job. He's 9-11 in the ACC, somewhat underperformed. They're down 58-55 to Virginia in the tournament, in the ACC tournament, and Virginia sends to the line an 87% free throw shooter, and he misses. And if he makes that free throw, one of the best free throw shooters in the country, if he makes that free throw, none of this story is being told. Instead, he misses the free throw. NC State makes that bank three.
Yeah, they rattled in a bank three.
Rattled in a bank three. Now, here's what I want to say about DJ Burns, which is pretty interesting, and a lot of people don't know. Yeah, he's a household name now, but it's actually his sixth year. He started out as a redshirt at Tennessee. He played for 3 years at Winthrop. I think they went to the tournament at least one of those years. Now this is his second year at NC State. In 2018, you guys will not believe this, he was the number three ranked high school basketball player in South Carolina in 2018. You know who number one was? A guy named Zion Williamson. So, you know, first of all, he's...
They apparently have the same chef.
Yeah. to say like he's not such a... He's just all of a sudden come out of the blue. He was a great, great high school player. He just kind of knocked around for a while. And now he's really found... look, he said it after the game. I loved his comments after the game, after yesterday's win, where he said, look, we started focusing and playing together as a team on the floor and off the court. We stopped being selfish. We started paying attention to basketball. And apparently they weren't doing the things that they were supposed to be doing until this tournament. And then they got locked in. But I think their run is over. Alabama is the epitome of what I said in the NCAA preview show. The NCAA tournament will, for a lot of teams, be about feast or famine at the three-point line. And Sears and Stevenson have been feasting. I mean, like, feasting unbelievably. And Rooster's right. If those lights stay on, they could pull off some shock. But I just don't think they'll stay on. I think for UConn, is the number
they don't have
one.
They don't start a center.
Well, they've
so
got that
against
big...
They've got Pringle at Ford, right? And Nelson at Ford?
Yeah, they've got Nelson, who, you know, he had his big game in the Sweet 16, and Pringle had a great game in the Elite Eight. But I don't know, you know.
You know how many points they needed from three-point land to beat Clemson?
How many?
Eight.
Exactly.
16 three-pointers. There's no way it's sustained.
They're on a microwave. Edie, all you need to see is that play that ended the game against Tennessee when Edie blocked Dalton connect. The athleticism of that play, when you see the still shots of that, you understand how long that guy is and how athletic that guy is. And UConn, all season long, had both the best offensive and defensive efficiency in the nation. They don't rely on the three-pointer to win. If that's not going, they've got other ways they can score. Their defense is shut down. The key to, I think this gets to Purdue versus UConn, and the key to that game will be, can they get Edie out from under the basket defensively? Can they force him out to the perimeter? Do they play Klingon around the perimeter? Because if you can get Edie out from under the basket, you got a much better chance to score. Watch UConn. I really hope we get to see that game, and I really hope we see some great coaching from Hurley to pull Edie out from under the basket. And I think UConn pulls this one off. By the way, Bison has UConn and Purdue in the finals. And I think if I have it right, he's got UConn as the champ. And Pope put in some BS like, like he's still finding out the names of the players on Bama, but he's got Purdue over NC State, Bama over UConn, and Bama over Purdue. So
can you guys believe the bandwagonism going on with this guy?
We just have to finally change the name.
It's just nauseating, isn't it?
It's bandwagon. I'm
gone
just...
from SMU to UNC, now to Alabama and North Carolina State.
His name is now bandwagon, period. That's it.
He's setting it up. He's setting up NC State. He's starting to connect himself more and more.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just in case they beat Purdue.
You heard it in Virginia Beach. He gave reasons why he doesn't hate NC State. He's got all of his bases covered. Bandwagon's impressive.
It's sort of like when he laid down a little bit of a marker for TCU in football a couple of years ago. But then they came back and they weren't any good at it, and you never heard about them again.
It's a special cape that bandwagon wears.
It really is. It's amazing.
Right, what's happening in the women's tournament?
Big night tonight.
Well, before we get there, Milk, who do you have advancing to the finals?
Oh, Purdue and UConn, obviously.
Yeah,
and
me too.
If I have to pick one now, I guess I got to go with UConn.
I'm going with UConn over Purdue. I think Danny Hurley his defense is such that even a hot 3-point shooting team has a hard time because the Huskies defend the 3-point line like no one else out there. Anyway, House, did you give us your
Yeah,
picks?
I think UConn pulls off the back to back and enters rare air and beats Purdue in the final.
I'm rooting against this from happening so that Florida can still be the last team to do this.
Boo. Anyway, on the women's end, tonight is going to be actually an awesome night of television watching. But so the Elite Eight started yesterday. NC State beat Texas. And South Carolina, the number one overall seed, beat Oregon State. So in the other half of the Elite Eight bracket, LSU is playing Iowa tonight at 7:30. I was seeded number one, LSU number three in their bracket. A repeat of last year's championship game with Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark going at it again. That will be primetime watching, I think. That'll be a great game. And then you've got tonight at 9:15 after that game, UConn with Paige Beckers back in full form, wanting to regain her crown as the best women's basketball player. And actually, I think when she's in top form, she's better than Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. That's just me. I may be biased as a UConn fan, but she is an amazing player, and she is going up against this freshman who next year, the year after, may be known as the best player who ever stepped foot on a women's basketball college court, Juju Watson for USC. So that's going to be fun to watch, both those games. I'm looking forward to it.
There's a little bit of a ugly thing that's developing, which is making me upset with this Kim Mulkey character. You know, there was first a story that ran in the Washington Post, which ended up being a lot of hot air. You know,
much ado about nothing.
Yeah, really. Much ado about nothing. She had this preemptive press conference, and then the story wasn't that big of a deal. And then the LA Times ran another story, and the language was poorly chosen. They had to change some of the language. But Mulkey has made this a little bit, and so has the press, a little bit about a little bit of a racial thing. You know, like it's Lily White teams against a little bit more black and urban teams in on the LSU team. I hope it doesn't go in that direction. I think this game should be about the kids and not about the coaches, and not about Kim Mulkey. And I would just like to see Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark play a great game tonight, one for the ages that you remember. And I do hope somehow we get to see Caitlin Clark and Paige Beckers on the floor at the same time, because that's what's always been lining up to happen.
I think this whole Kim Mulkey, you know, expose that we've been hearing about, either she made a mountain out of a molehill and the Washington Post was never trying to do a hit piece on her, or she intimidated them into watering down their story, which I really hope didn't happen. Because if their story is just the piece that we read yesterday, then you have to ask yourself, would they even have done this story if she were a male coach? It's just wasn't that interesting. Big deal. She's intense, right? She's intense. Big deal. She's a little flamboyant. Like, there are no men coaches who were like that. You know, I mean,
Bobby Knight.
Or Tark gnawing on a towel throughout a game. It was just kind of silly. I don't know. But at the same time, we all know that she does have a past at Baylor that is open to some criticism, the way she treated Brittany Griner and others, if it's true.
Right.
And, you know, that's what reporting is supposed to be all about, getting to the bottom of it. But what they put out yesterday, I thought was just a boring waste of time reading.
Yeah.
And she shouldn't be holding preemptive press conferences trying to intimidate the press either. Anyway, I digress. So House, you have this item on our agenda about righting a wrong with the officials?
Sure, you might remember.
Tell us about that.
You might remember earlier, probably about a month or so ago, the Knicks got robbed of a game at the end of a game where I forget who the opponent was. Maybe you remember, but the officials made a terrible call. It was a game deciding call. After the game, the officials admitted they got the wrong call and they couldn't do anything about it. In the New Jersey high school state championship, there was in the semifinals a shot that was released that was clearly on replay, still had some time left on the clock, like 0.2 seconds, 0.1 second. I don't know if you guys saw this. It was a big story. The officials on the court called it no good. And as a result, the team that had won the game, the shot was released on time, but the officials didn't call that, was kept out of the championship for the state high school championship. After the game, the officials acknowledged they got it wrong. The basket should have counted, but under the rules, you can't replay the game. You can't change the outcome. Last week, the Sixers on Friday night against the Clippers had a situation at the end of the game where Kelly Oubre was fouled down 1 point. At the end of the game, they lost by 1 point. After the game, the officials admitted they messed up. A foul should have been called, and arguably the Sixers would have won the game. And it just raises the question for me, have we really reached the point where we've got instant replays and all kinds of technology? Sports is supposed to be about fairness. Have we really not reached the point where we can't right a wrong and correct something? Now, I was having this discussion with my kids last week, and they said, well, the problem is in the Sixers game, Oubre's got to go to the free throw line, and he could miss both free throws, and they could lose by a point, or he could only make one, and then it goes to overtime. You can't just give it. All right, so I don't know what you do in a free throw situation.
I do. I think the solution is the last play of every game should be automatically reviewable if a coach requests it. And because you have to have an immediate resolution to this. You can't have the next day the league say, we got that wrong, because there's nothing they can do about it at that point, especially since professional sports are so tied to gambling now. They can't go back a day or two later and unring the bell, right? So it's got to be immediate. And I don't know why we can't just do it immediately. What's the harm?
Well, the Sixers play was reviewed and the Knicks play was reviewed. And I don't know what it is that they don't have a close enough understanding of the rule book. The screen's not good enough on the side. I don't know. Those plays were reviewed and it wasn't changed. And then I don't know what kind of postmortem occurs after the game where the officials get to talk about it, maybe look at it closer. But there has to be a solution here. This is eventually going to – in the New Jersey case, yeah, it was high school basketball, but it meant the kids couldn't play for a state championship. Yep. This is going to mean the difference whether it's – a puck going in, a ball going over the line. This is going to mean the decision whether a team goes into a playoff or doesn't, gets eliminated from a playoff. For the Sixers, that win could be the difference between whether or not they're in the play-in tournament or not. These are huge, huge decisions being made. And these aren't judgment calls. This is objectively, you look on the screen, it was wrong. And so I guess the question comes down to, do we just say, look, human error is going to happen and it's going to continue to be part of sports? Or have we reached the point where we can expect precision and wrong is wrong? And like, let's just do the shot clock one. Don't you think that if the officials get it wrong, let's say they don't do it on the side, how about an hour later or 2 hours later, they realize it? In the Sixers case, it was an hour later. What do you do when you realize an hour later the shot was good?
Well,
can't change the result.
How about this? Instead of having the in-game officials trying to stand there and figure it out, you know, under the hood with the crowd booing and, you know, yelling right. and calling them names. Final play of the game and in pro sports gets reviewed at the home, at the league headquarters, like Major League Baseball does it in New York. And take your time and get it right and make the call. That can happen in 10 minutes instead of hours later.
True. I'm waiting for Milk's hard hitting analysis here.
Well, Milk? I mean, what if it's a play that's impacted the game that's not the last play of the game? Then what?
Well, you're going to have to eat some of that. You know, that's just the breaks at some point.
Yeah. I mean,
they could do a better job of getting these plays right for sure, but you can't be stopping every game for 10-minute reviews.
I think if the rule is if it's a consequential decision that could potentially affect the outcome of the game, it can be reviewed within 15 minutes or whatever. I like Rooster's idea in the league office.
Yeah. I mean, at some point, don't these officials just have to be held more accountable? I mean, maybe you have to get fired. I don't know. If you screw up at your job, you get fired. So
it's funny you should say that, Milk, because after that game, Kelly Oubre, I don't know if you saw it, kind of went viral. Kelly Oubre ran up to the three referees and he took his hand. He goes, "You bitch, you a bitch, you a bitch," which is very, very. Very, very funny. You got to see the videos. Very funny. And he got fined $50,000. But it's a great point, Milk, because, you know, some of these guys, wins and losses can mean the difference between incentives and contracts. Like, why aren't the referees being punished? Yeah, they don't get paid the same amount as players. But where's the punishment of a referee when they get it wrong?
Well, and it's more egregious in the NBA because that's their full-time job, right? Like, NFL. It's not their full-time job.
Yeah, well, it should be. It really should be.
Lawyers and whatever at night or during the day.
Plus, I'm pretty sure that now that Major League Baseball got rid of some of those dinosaurs, that the quality of umpiring has gone up in the last year.
Yeah. Well, it's all going to go to AI anyways, so it'll all be fixed.
I think the SMQBs are going to be the ones that bring about this change. And when it happens, all fans in all major league sports are going to thank the SMQB's podcast for changing this. Right. It's going to happen. Five lawyers involved. Good night, Gracie.
All right. Well, let's get in a little LL Cool J. Who's got a punchable face? Don't call it a comeback.
I'm going to knock you out. Cue the music. I got one. Guys, I have a very personal beef with street racing. You know, it's affected, you know, people in my life very, very deeply in a profound way. And street racing is dangerous. I realize that one of the Philadelphia Eagles' very own, Jalen Carter, we don't know the full details of that, but in that situation, you know, someone died and speeding on the roads. Yesterday or the other night, I guess it was, Rashee Rice was driving a Corvette against a Lamborghini in a street race in Dallas. And they lost control of their car. Amazingly, somebody, and I still don't understand how, had some dash cam video of it. And then somebody else had some video of these guys standing up and walking away from their cars with some duffels or backpacks. And the rumor is that the driver of the Corvette and the Lamborghini, and the driver of the Corvette was Rashee Rice, the wide receiver from the Kansas City Chiefs, who really came on strong for the Super Bowl champions, that they were carrying weapons that would have been illegal to carry. And so they walked away from the scene, in particular because they were concerned about that. There was apparently some stolen shoes as well, like some very high profile signed or autographed or somebody's famous shoes as well. I don't know if that had anything to deal with it, But it's bad enough to do the street racing. It's bad enough that someone got injured. It's bad enough that someone could have gotten killed. The fact that as a professional athlete, you get up and you walk away and you leave the scene, I think in those kinds of cases, the running is almost, if not worse than the hitting. And I don't know what they're going to do with Rashee Rice. I don't know what the league is going to do. I don't know what the Chiefs are going to do. But I know what this podcast is going to do. We're going to punch him in the face. And I hope he suffers a significant punishment from that. That was really bad.
I also cannot fathom how stupid one has to be to decide, you know what? I just finally broke into the Chiefs starting lineup. We won the Super Bowl. And I'm going to put that entire career at risk by doing something selfish and stupid like street racing. It's just stupidity at the highest level.
Idiotic.
It really is.
Do you have a punch?
I've got a couple punches, slaps, whatever you want to call them. The first, Milk's coming through today. The first one is against, this is new from today. I don't know if it's the NCAA or who, I guess it would be the NCAA or whoever at the Moda Center in Portland, Oregon. But did you guys hear?
This is a good one. Mm-hmm.
The entire weekend,
unbelievable.
Games are still going on today, right? It's same location.
Yeah.
The 3-point line has been 9 inches, which is not like a small amount, too short for the women teams that played this past weekend
the court.
On one side.
On one side of the
court. Yeah, on the other side it was the correct dimensions.
I'm kind of in amazement. Like, how did this happen? And who makes this call? Like, and the fact they got one side right, but the other side wrong.
And you can, like, Brittany, if you're looking at a picture of center court, you can clearly see that the 3-point line is much closer to the center on one half than it is to the other. And I did some research and found out how this happened. The NCAA adopted the international 3-point line back in the 2021-2022 season, which is a longer shot. And what must have happened is two different people were painting the lines for this court, and one was using the old dimensions and one was using the new.
The Snickers commercial with the chefs.
It's hilarious.
It's hilarious.
It's
crazy.
Right. It's hilarious.
Have you seen the zoomed out picture of like the full court?
Yes.
Yeah.
You can actually see it.
Yes.
What the fuck?
Oh, that's dumb. That's just dumb. Do you have another one?
Yeah, I've got one. This is an important one, actually. I think it's we need to get a little serious here. I don't know if you noticed this weekend, but the Braves manager came out and said that his family was afraid to go to Philadelphia to the Phillies games this weekend, because the fans were too rough and scary and threatening to his family. And I just want to talk about this because I feel like we need to slap, punch.
The Braves manager, I think.
The Philadelphia
Phillies fan base. I'd slap that guy for being so stupid because he's just guaranteed more rain coming down on his family.
And by the way, there's a fellow SMQ podcaster that wanted to also send this in, this punch to the Philadelphia fan base. I'll leave him nameless, but it's between Nace and Pope. Toby, I think you need to answer to this.
You have a great suggestion. This is a very, very serious situation. And I think we should do a live podcast from the K lot. And you guys should announce that you want to punch the Philadelphia fans for this, and we'll line it up. We'll bring some White Claws for your milk, some Modelo's, and then you guys can come to the aid of little Brian Snitker, who's so little worried about his family getting yelled at. We don't have pimento and cheese at our games, Braves fans.
Oh my God. I'm with House on this one.
I don't know. His family was in danger.
Well, we know it's not Pope because he's no longer a Braves fan. I mean bandwagon, because he's no longer a Braves fan. He's back with the Rangers.
Oh, that's
until,
right.
Yeah. So it must be Bison who's upset about it. Because he's a purist. He's a baseball purist.
I'll leave him nameless, but he wanted to make sure this was mentioned on the pod.
Thank you, Bison. Okay.
All right. Your gambling partner. Listen, I have one too.
Whoa.
I am going to punch. I don't know how to pronounce this town in Idaho. I don't even know how to pronounce Idaho, apparently.
Pronounce
Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
So one of the women's basketball games, regional games, is in this town in Idaho. The Utah women's basketball team is walking to dinner, and this vehicle pulls up on them and screams a bunch of racial slurs and using the N-word, threatening them. They go to dinner, they're walking back, and the same vehicle pulls up on them, revving the engine like it's going to run some of them over, screaming the N-word at them, threatening to harm them. The coach, who's a white woman, was terrified. The players were terrified. It's just disgusting. I mean, what is wrong with people in this world? Why would you do that to what are they, 20? 20-year-olds?
Get a grip, people. Get a grip.
Jesus, they're just athletes trying to play sports, and they're bringing freaking revenues to your shitty little town for this tournament. So just grow the fuck up and act like a decent human being.
Get a life.
All right. Sorry about that. Anybody have a lasso?
Barbecue sauce.
To counter that nastiness.
Please, someone give something happy. No.
But I'd like to give a lasso to the Braves manager for standing up to hatred.
I'd like to give Kevin Costner a lasso for having the balls to wear that ridiculous hairdo behind you in that photograph.
The flash dance hairdo?
You're so bitter about the natural.
I am. It just galls me.
You know, we already covered it, but I do think that DJ Burns and the way he's laughing his way. He's not exactly an Adonis. I just think he's a good story. I mean, you know, with so much pressure on the line and so much craziness, he's keeping it light on the court. He's smiling through the whole thing. He looks the way a college athlete should look playing NCAA basketball. We don't have much amateurism left in college sports. DJ Burns plays like an amateur athlete with a smile and fun. I just think that if there were a character in college basketball, Ted Lasso world, DJ yep. Burns would be one.
And the reports are that he's also a really great guy. Like after this huge victory against Clemson, he's out there doing selfies with the security staff at the arena.
He was. Yep.
Just being a really good person, you know, not a prima donna at all.
That's great.
Who's got a buzzer beater?
Guys, I have a buzzer beater because you know I love my football with a U and an O. Football. Premier League soccer, which I keep trying to get all our listeners in, is coming down one of the most heated battles. They don't have playoffs in Premier League. They play 38 games, and whoever finishes with the most points in the league wins the league. And it's been the case for most years that one team runs away with it and is decided before the season ends. This year, three of the perennial favorites are all bunched up at the top: Liverpool, Arsenal, and Man City. Yesterday, Arsenal and Man City played to a scoreless tie. And so Liverpool has 67 points, Arsenal has 65 points, Manchester City has 64 points, 3 points for a win. 1 point for a tie, 0 points for a loss. There's only 9 games to go. The 9 games will definitely decide it. It's really going to be a great ending to Premier League. Get yourself up on Saturday and Sunday mornings to watch the action anytime between 7:30 and 11:30 Eastern most weekends. It's good stuff while we're in the early stages of baseball season. And once college basketball ends, you're going to need something to fit your sports in for the weekend. Add on Premier League and F1 on your Saturday and Sunday mornings.
Milk, buzzer beater.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just think it's, getting back to the NCAA tournament, we talk about the teams and the players a lot, but it's such a experience and career builder for the coaches too. I saw at least 2 were hired maybe today or over the weekend, teams that went to the tournament that took over at high profile places that didn't have good seasons. But I mean, you see this all the time. I've probably seen 7 or 8 coaches since the tournament ended or teams have been eliminated that have been hired at other places. They've elevated their career. So it's cool to see that. I mean, there's a lot.
And of course, Kevin Keats got extended at NC State.
I don't know what they're going to do with him.
No, they already extended him.
Yeah, which is crazy. I mean, that had to be an awkward conversation.
Yeah,
they were going to fire me a couple weeks ago. But it's cool to see it. See all the coaching changes and
yeah,
neat stuff.
Well, I know you guys really didn't want to talk about the Yankees, but my buzzer beater is Soto's defense. Apparently Juan Soto and Jackie Bradley Jr. have the same agent, and all offseason Juan Soto spent working out with Jackie Bradley Jr., formerly of the Red Sox, on his defense. And you saw it on that play where he charged that ball in right field and threw the guy out. The game saving put out at home plate against the Astros. He's put in the work and he's a better defensive outfielder than he was last year. And hats off to him.
Rooster would scream for year after year, the Cashman need to get rid of players who just swung for the fences and it was home runner strikeout, winning every game 8-7 if they could. He wanted pitching, he wanted defense. It's a 4-game sample size, but so far you've got hitting that's not just reliant on a home run and very improved defense, 2 plays that won a game. So early returns are good for the Yankees.
Yeah, and their plate discipline is like it was the last time they were good. You got a lot, guys like Soto, you know, getting deep into the count and then hitting a single instead of swinging for the fences and striking out or hitting a home run. So it's good. It's good. It's encouraging. The injury bug could always hit because it's an old team. That's the thing that scares me. Any other buzzers?
No.
Before we go, then I
want to vomit after that one.
Go Yankees, bro. Before we go, I do want to pour one out for Vontae Davis. Sad story. 35 years old, found dead today. There's no known cause of action, cause of death. There's no suspicious circumstances yet that other than the fact that he lived in Florida. Sorry, Milk. But, you know, you remember him when he was 30 years old, playing a Pro Bowl cornerback for the Bills in the halftime of a game midseason. He just decided he wasn't feeling it anymore and retired at halftime. At age 30. And then 5 years later, he's found dead. It's a sad story. We'll keep our ears open for more reporting on what happened. But, rest in peace, Vontae Davis.
A good one. Rest in peace.
Anything else, fellas? We missed you guys, Bison and Pope. Hope you're back next Monday.
Miss you, Bison and Bandwagon. See you next week.
Check out the Elite 8 tonight on TV.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay. And he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.